Chapter 57.
I have a senator to call. In the meantime, please.
Larson points around and smiles wide.
Enjoy.
With nothing for us unskilled and in-the-way contestants to do while we approach the refill tanker, we take our first real look at the interior of High Heaven's main cabin. It is enormous, larger than half a football field wrapped into a tube, and absolutely beautiful. Imagine entering a high-class arcade. I'm not sure if that's an oxymoron, but that's what it reminds me of. With wood paneling, intimate warm lighting, seating areas, video games, dining areas, a small theater even. Yes, wood. In a spaceship. I'm sure it's not real wood. And we're floating, so I can't tell what it would be like to walk on it as a floor, but the way it surrounds us, lining the cylindrical shape of the cabin, creates a surprisingly cozy feeling. Aside from the cockpit at the very front, there seems to be an intentional lack of buttons and controls, like Larson really wanted it to feel like a home away from home. It works. On his way past us, he hands me a bag of small rubber balls.
First to 100 wins.
What do I do with these? He points above us, and I have to remind myself that there is no up or down. There are no floors or ceilings. It's disorienting for a moment. Then I float up to discover a game board set into one of the walls, with 5 concentric holes, each with a point value.
It's skee ball, without the gravity. Here, let me show you.
Larson plucks one of the balls from the bag, squints, and tosses it gently toward the board. It floats into the second ring. A little vacuum sucks it in, and a ding indicates 20 points. An unfamiliar, disembodied woman's voice startles me.
20 points. Excellent, Zach. You're getting better.
Claire yelps and spins her head.
Who the hell is that?
Zach chuckles.
Oh, where are my manners? That's Martha. I know the name is a little over the top. She's nothing like my mother. She'll be our guide of sorts, an AI, like the ones in the lifts back in Stage 2, but considerably more powerful. Don't worry, though. She doesn't have a personality, per se, so there won't be any computer uprisings on this trip. Isn't that right, Martha?
That's correct, Zach. 0% chance of me taking over the ship and killing you all.
We laugh. It was funny. But Martha didn't mean it to be. Did she? The 5 of us look at each other, thinking the same thing. You hear a human voice, so you instinctively project onto it human qualities, like a sense of humor or a veiled threat. It's hard not to. So every time you interact with an AI, you have to consciously remind yourself that it's just a machine. Just a really long line of code, an algorithm housed in a box somewhere. Isn't it?
Thank you, Martha. Now, will you give our guests, the 5 contestants, a tour of the rest of the ship? I have a bit of negotiating to do.
Certainly, Zach. Paper, Benji, Claire, Aurora, and Albert, please follow the lighted path.
So while Larson debates with the authorities just how many lawyers he'll need when we get back, Martha introduces us to the medbay, and the kitchen, in quotes, and the gym, and finally, our cabins. There are incredibly 40 cabins on this ship, each capable of housing 2 crew, for a total of 80 people on board. Larson is clearly thinking ahead, decades ahead. For this voyage, though, there are so few of us, we'll each get a tiny double bunk cabin to ourselves, twice as much room as we'd gotten back in the studio, though it'll still feel just like a crowded elevator. In place of gravity, the rooms have vacuums to hold us onto the bed, for example, or to hold toiletries while we bathe. As we return, floating via the second hallway, we pass Larson's captain's quarters. I half expect full paneling, a few bottles of rum, perhaps a peg leg leaning up against the wall, or a parrot perched on a post next to his writing desk. He's the captain of a pirate ship now, after all. But no, it's exactly like ours, albeit slightly larger, with a few more gizmos at his disposal, and no cameras.
He's yelling, "And you're going to let them blow us up on live television?"
He slams his fist down on the panel, ending the call. Then he turns, noticing us, forces an exhalation, smooths his silver hair. After a moment, smiles.
"Ah, perfect timing. Won't you come in?"
It takes a few minutes for Larson's hands to stop shaking from rage and for him to tell us what he knows. Despite the best efforts of his two senator friends, this is all he was able to negotiate. If, within a week, anyone aborts the mission, they will not be prosecuted, including Larson himself.
"We are, as you know, on a highly elliptical orbit, with an apogee of nearly 15,000 miles from Earth. The perigee, or nearest point of orbit, is just under 1,000 miles, which we will reach in 7 days, just within range of the government's satellite anti-missile systems."
Claire stutters. "They would kill us?"
"They're bluffing. Of course they wouldn't kill us."
He taps his chin.
"I don't think."
"You don't think?"
"Sorry, bad joke. No, I'm absolutely certain they wouldn't kill us. They know murdering innocent citizens on live TV isn't a possibility, and they're already stretching the poor Constitution to its ripping point. No, they don't want us to go. However, they definitely don't want a revolution. It's an idle threat."
"But..." "Oh my God, there's a but. We're all going to die." Larson laughs.
"We're not all going to die, Claire. Just you."
"That's not funny."
"Sorry. In any case, just to be on the safe side, I've decided, instead of 1.5 orbits, taking 3 weeks, we will break free and head to Mars after the first half orbit, in 7 days, coming close enough to release the lifeboats for our departing heroes. Yes. You'll be included in the final installation of the Wall of Heroes, and we'll use Earth's gravity to give us a nice push as we engage our own engines for the voyage to Mars."
Benji says what we're all thinking. "So, at some point we're still going to be close enough for them to shoot us out of the sky?"
"Well, we wouldn't come out of the sky. We would explode. Atomized into teeny little pieces, floating outward forever."
"Nice.
Listen, all, it's not going to happen. I'll bet you $1 billion. Trust me."
Claire covers her face with her hands.
"Great. He just said, trust me."
Albert shakes his head.
"I don't get it. The sabotage attempt in stage 2. Now this. Why?"
"I think the government was happy with their little monopoly on Mars, however lazy they were about it. This private mission threatens to open up economic opportunities that they won't be able to control. So now they're getting desperate, which means the rewards of our trip must be greater than we'd thought. Mining, terraforming, colonization, tourism even. Imagine it. We're talking about multiple trillion-dollar industries."
Aurora pulls herself over to the window, looking out into the black. "You're already a trillionaire." Larson shrugs and smiles.
"It's not really about the money. It's about risk and reward."
I float over to his ear and whisper, "Maybe this element thing?" He pushes me away.
"For the last time, it is not some imaginary, undiscovered element paper."
I gasp. He's never spoken to me like that.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry, paper. But the evidence simply doesn't support the theory. I did quite a bit of research after we last spoke about it. There is nothing, nothing. I would know. Face it, your mother is..."
And he clenches his teeth. He doesn't have to say it. "Crazy. Delusional. Total nut job. It's true, but my ears get hot with anger anyway." "Oh yeah, Zach? Well, at least I have a mother." He steals his gaze on me, a glare I haven't yet seen either.
"I'll give you a moment to think that one over."
"Oh, God,
Zach, I'm sorry. Benji raises his hand.
What the hell are you two talking about?
Larson smiles, waves his hands in the air. Nothing. Nothing. Just the rant of an old man. Listen, tensions are running a bit high, and I completely understand. Why don't we all retreat to the main cabin? We have a week to complete what would normally take three.
As we float out of his cabin, he tugs my ankle, holding me back, and whispers ominously into my ear, "Strike four."
Strike four? There are only three strikes. You know, if you're still using the baseball metaphor.
Oh, I was never much of a baseball fan. Regardless, I'm trying to be ominous.
You're not doing a very good job.
You're right. Let me try a different tack. In case you haven't noticed, I've been quite the cheerleader for you. The viewers love you. I believe you've got the right stuff. To win. I don't want you to ruin it by becoming...
Like my mother? I flick his fingers away from my suit and float away.